This January, the energy price cap is due to rise. But with E.ON Next, you can start your year on the right track. Our Next Pledge tariff guarantees to keep your energy prices below the cap. So if the cap goes up or down, you're still winning. Beat the price cap and save with E.ON Next. Switching is a breeze. Visit eonnext.com today. Next Pledge is a 12-month fixed-term tariff. Rates adjusted quarterly to stay below Ofgem's price cap. Your bill depends on usage. T's and C's apply.
You are an awful player this season, so why don't you suck it up and work on your game instead of worrying about, my winger's different than warm-ups. It's going to throw me off. I'm going to play terrible. Morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. New week, Tim. How are you doing, North Carolina?
I'm doing good. Nice weekend, relaxing weekend. How was yours?
It was good. Yeah, did some work on the house on Saturday. I've been wiring my house for the last week and a half, pulling cable, trying to set circuits up, drilling holes, connecting them to lights. Like, it's been a lot going on the last week or so, but I still am not done. I got this week to go before I get inspected. So it's been good, though. Learning process. It's nice.
Is it on YouTube? YouTube Academy?
My boss here at Apollo Engineering, he wired his house 25 years ago. So he apparently knows how to do it. And it's kind of like common sense. You got to bring power in and you got to bring power out. And that's kind of how it works. And you just go from one light to the next light to the next light, or one outlet to the next outlet to the next outlet, and you bring it back to the panel and you're done. There's a little bit more to it than that, when three-way switches and such. But yeah, it's you could figure it. Like a caveman can do it. It's not tough. But like so the reason I'm doing this is I get a quote from the electrician, and I'll be honest, it was $30,000 for this guy to wire a house. Everything's open. There's no walls. There's no insulation. There's no nothing. It's just a skeleton, and there's lots of areas to run wires. So I just figured, well, I can do that myself. I can staple wires to the ceiling and run it and connect it to where the light's going to be and the outlet's going to be. To date, Tim, his quote was $30,000, $29,000 and change. I have spent, and this is buying two nice tools. One's called a hole hog and one's called a wire stapler. Primo tools. The creme de la creme. I have spent $4,000. That's all the wire. That's all the can lights. That's everything. $4,000. And I figure I'll spend another 6 to 10 for all the light fixtures and everything. So if I'm all in everything for under 15, it's a win. It's an absolute win. So these subs are just, they're crooks, absolute crooks.
A lot of them are. I just hope you're being safe. The listeners, we've had people that are our electricians who follow the show that are worried that you're going to hurt yourself.
Oh, I absolutely am not being safe. I'm up on scaffolding. Gosh, last week, 2 weeks ago, I was up on the scaffolding because our living room has extra high ceilings. I want to say they're 25 feet. And so I'm up on the scaffolding putting can lights in, and my kids are playing outside. And all of a sudden, my daughter busts through the door, which is zip tied shut because there's no handles on them yet. She comes busting through the door trying to escape because someone's trying to throw a snowball at her. And I'm up on the scaffolding, like, precarious position. I let her have it. I'm like, what the hell is going on down there? I'm like, A, you break my door. B, I might fall off the scaffolding and die. Is that how you want your dad to die? Like, I'm just like, I don't think I said the last part, but I'm like, that's so dangerous. I was like, getting after her. So yeah. Now there's a rule. You can't go near the house when I'm working on it. Because they're just like animals. Absolute caged animals that break through my door. But yeah, it's, sorry. I'm amazed how many holes you drill through a house. Once you get all the framing up, all the joists, all the structure, everything, I'm just bombing through with holes everywhere. The plumber is being more liberal than I am. He's bombing through holes everywhere. And I'm just scratching my head thinking, is this allowed? Is this too code? I don't know if that's right. Because he's like taking a joist and just bombing a 4-inch hole right through it. I was like, holy crap. Doesn't seem safe, but apparently it is. I don't know. We're getting inspections this week because the spray foam's coming in next week. And I don't want to hear any listeners, this spray foam, in 10 years, they're going to be saying that stuff's garbage. You're going to be all this. It's going to be like asbestos. I'm like, just say, you know what? I don't want to hear it. I got a good deal on spray foam. It's good. It keeps the mice out. It keeps the heat in, the cold out, or vice versa in the summer. So just stuff it. Okay? I don't want to hear it. I got enough going on. But anyways, the electricity is going well. I'll be done by the end of the week, hopefully.
Good. I hope you're safe and hope you get it done.
I do too. All right. There's been some happenings in the NHL. Let's move on to greener pastures. Speaking of greener pastures, Jacob Trouba. We did a show on Friday. We didn't know if he was going to be traded, if he was going to be waived, what the situation was going to be. Well, as soon as we press stop on the record button, lo and behold, he gets traded to the Anaheim Mighty Ducks. He is going out west. Pretty simple, clear cut. New York Rangers GM doesn't want him. Trouba wants to stay. GM says, well, I'm going to put you on waivers. Okay, trade me. That should be it, right? Well, let's not get too ahead of ourselves. Jacob Trouba had a little bit to say for his introductory press conference to the Anaheim Ducks. What did he say, Tim, to the reporters? Because it was very, very striking, very eye-opening.
Yeah, really strange, especially because he's like a guy that I know he's rough and tumble on the ice, but he's a pretty classy guy. Like the organization, yep, he's involved with, the foundations, he's the captain of an original six franchise. He's not going to air dirty laundry, you know, willy-nilly, but he said some things that you clearly know that he's not happy with how things went down. So he was asked about the timeline of it. And he said yesterday morning, meaning Friday morning, it was accept this trade or we're scratching you. And that was, I think, the Columbus trade. And he said, okay. So they scratched him. And then the next offer was accept this trade or you're going on waivers. And I think that was obviously the Anaheim trade. So he's basically saying they gave me no choice. And they kind of put me in a corner there. And he said, quote, I'll be honest. I was put in a position this summer to make a decision between my family and my career. And I chose my family. I would choose my family 100 times over again. I don't feel bad about that. I was happy about that. I don't like that it was made public necessarily or how everything unfolded so publicly, but I guess that's part of New York and what happens. I made it difficult to play with that hanging over everything. The result is the result. I'm happy with moving forward. I'm not thrilled with how it went down. In my opinion, things could have been handled better. I'm not blaming anybody or anything, just kind of how it happened. I thought it was kind of unfortunate. There's a couple of things here. The first thing that's worth mentioning is that hanging over his head, he hasn't had a great season. And you have to think this, he's saying this sort of explains some of it, where he's distracted, he's stressed out, he's straight up unhappy by that. And the second thing is like, hey, organization, you did this really poorly and I'm not happy with that. And I'm telling the whole world right now.
Well, yeah, it's the nature of the beast. I go back and forth on this, whose side to take, because you hear Jacob Trouba in his statement, you go, poor guy, like that sucks. This has been weighing over him, this, that, and the other. But then you sit down and you think of the reasoning of Chris Drury and you go, you know what? He had to make a move. This team is struggling. This is a lot of money being paid for a player who's not producing. And it's the nature of the beast. He's allowed to do it. These are the tools that are left to him. So here we go. So you go back and forth. And like you said, I think last week, you feel for the player, you feel for the family and the person behind the player. But you can't get into that, I think, in this situation. And it's unfortunate that Jacob Trouba feels that way. But that's the way she goes. And now you're going out to Anaheim. And it's just funny how we phrased it. It's like, yeah, they said we're going to scratch you. Okay, sounds good. Then we're going to waive you. Oh, no, okay, let's trade. Let's you know what? I'll play ball. I want to go. Because it's an interesting situation. Because he was there during the Barkley-Gaudreau situation. He saw it firsthand. So he knows Chris Drury wasn't just balking and you know, empty threats. He followed through with Barkley-Gaudreau and waived him. And the Sharks had an agreement to pick him up as soon as he was waived. So he knows Chris Drury is capable of these things. And it's just, that's in the back of his mind. And he's probably sitting at home talking to his wife saying, listen, either I take a trade to Anaheim or they're going to waive me and we will be in Columbus where we don't want to be. For whatever reason, he didn't want to go to the Columbus Blue Jackets. So which place is better? Where do you want to go? And he obviously chose Anaheim. So off he goes to Anaheim. And I think in the end of this, I think they both look fine. I think everyone can understand where Chris Drury is coming from. Everybody can understand where Jacob Trouba is coming from. I don't feel like he's airing dirty laundry by any means. He's just stating a fact. He thought he was wrong. He felt like he could have gone a little bit better, but how, like what more do you expect? And they tried to trade him last year. He apparently blocked a trade. They tried to trade him in the offseason. He apparently blocked the trade. There's only so many suitors for this guy who makes $8 million and doesn't put a ton of points on the board. There's only so many GMs who would covet his services, Pat Verbeek being one of them. So what more do you want? You can't just wave a magic wand and say, oh, the Colorado Avalanche want you to be on their team. Oh, the Toronto Maple Leafs are dying for you to be on their team, like the higher end teams. They don't want a player of your ilk. They want the guy who's going to be valuable, the puck moving player that most teams want. And so you have to kind of go where you're wanted. And those are the teams that wanted you for whatever reason. And I don't know, you kind of lose your sympathy for Jacob Trouba when he says things like this, because yeah, you know, but you do make a lot of money and you have been playing this way for a long time. So what do you want to do here? And Drouby, he came out and he defended himself and he made this comment. He said, it's my job and 31 other GMs' jobs to try to do everything we can to help our team. That's the things at our disposal in the CBA. I'm not trying to mess with players. I have a ton of respect for Barkley and certainly, as I've said already, for Jacob. I'm just trying to do the best I can to move the team forward and make changes that I think are necessary. Boom. Clear cut. Right, Tim?
I mean, so what is it that you think that Trouba is not happy with? Because he doesn't use the word respect anywhere, but it kind of feels like he feels disrespected by the thing. I mean, I could be wrong. I don't want to put words in his mouth. But even friend of the show, Greg Wyshynski, asked Trouba at the press conference if he thought the Rangers discussed putting him on the waivers was a pressure point for a trade. And Trouba said, yes, it was a threat. And so is that just like a little bit of saltiness that maybe is unwarranted? Or do you feel like he's got a point there?
Well, yeah, I think it was a veiled threat for sure, because you don't want to get waived, because under the current CBA, as soon as you get waived, you are up for grabs on any team. Any team can grab you, regardless of your no move clause or teams on your list you don't want to go to. And that's a flaw that will be fixed in the upcoming CBA, because we've seen it now twice with the New York Rangers. I guarantee you players are going to fix that flaw and they're going to say, we have a no movement clause where we cannot go to any franchise. If we don't want to go, we have to say yes, whether it's from the AHL or the NHL. That's a whole other ball of wax that's going to be handled in the offseason. But yeah, I think he has a point, and I think it is a threat. But again, going back to, like, Chris Drury has a job to do. And if you're a GM and you're looking at this team, it's like, gosh, we've lost four in a row. We're scuttling. We have no signs of improvement. Who can we move to make this better? It's our captain. It's the guy who makes $8 million who isn't doing anything. So he's doing that. And he's trying it with other players too. Chris Kreider, I'm sure Mika Zibanejad is feeling the pressure. There are a lot of bad contracts on this team, and he's just starting with the obvious one, the low-hanging fruit, which is Jacob Trouba. So at the end of the day, he's not happy. He's pissed because he's the captain. He's the face of the franchise. He's done so much for this team, blah, 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 blah. Just suck it up and go. You could have prevented this by playing better, but you didn't. So you have to go. The team is struggling. You have to make a change. I commend Chris Drury for doing this. It's tough. You don't want to be that guy, but this is your job. This is not a feel-good league. It's a results league, and they're not putting up results. This is a Stanley Cup contending team. It should be. And right now, they are looking nothing of the sorts. And this is what happens.
I think you have to give a little bit of credit to Drury as well for getting out from both Trouba and Goudreau. He waived Goudreau, and he was claimed by, luckily for Barkley, a team that he already knew and had relationships with in the Sharks. Now Trouba, and getting out from both of these contracts without having to do anything, like you didn't give up a first, you didn't have to give up like a Kaapo Kakko or anything like that. You're able to get out of both of these contracts for basically nothing. Which, yeah, some of it hurts. Some of it's a little bit, you know, salty, like we've been talking about. But this opens up all kinds of possibilities for them, which we'll talk about next with signing Shesterkin long term. But there's also some cap room this year that gives them the ability to go out and make a move at the deadline if they want to, or even sooner.
And then you have to sit and look back and wonder what the hell Pat Verbeek is doing. Why on earth do you make this deal? As it stands right now, your team is nowhere near a playoff spot. Your last place in the Pacific, your second last place in the West, and you have third last place, sorry, the Nashville Predators. I always forget how terrible they are. But you're bottom five in the league. Why? Are you doing this for the future? Are you doing this to make your team a Stanley Cup contender next year? I don't understand why this makes sense for them. And you already got Radko Gudas.
Yeah, I can answer that. The first thing, so you have to look at what Pat Verbeek said. And he said, first of all, that it's rare you're able to acquire a player with Jacob's experience, stature, and ability, which is basically saying it's the same as what Rutherford said about Montgomery 2 weeks ago. Like, if one of those is available, you grab him. And so he likes the player, obviously. We know what Verbeek was like as a player and as a GM. He likes those hard-hitting, hard-nosed guys. But I think there's two things at play here. The first we talked about on Friday's show is that Trouba is contract expires next year, which makes him very movable. So you can have him on the books for about a year, a calendar year, and then approaching next trade deadline, year and a half, you move him for a team that is looking to acquire some defensive depth, some hard-hitting, you know, blue liner that's really coveted in the playoffs in the right situation. And you can go get something for him when you gave up very little to get him. So it's a tradable contract next year. And the second thing that Verbeek said was Trouba's still young. Like, he thinks he has a lot of good hockey left. And maybe this is posturing just a little bit, but he said it's not just about right now. It's that Trouba can be here for the future to be a leader for the young players on this team. And I wonder if you can disagree with him about that and whether he even means it when he says it. But I think he intends that Trouba could be part of the future long term.
Maybe. I think the first option sounds a lot more stomachable. I get that. You have him this year, play out the season, have him next year, get acclimated. Hopefully he improves his game. He'll get more responsibility, more ice time, and then you offload him at the deadline. That makes sense. But still, the idea 30. That he's there long term is crazy.
He's only 30. I think he's got a lot of hockey left. It won't be at $8 million, obviously, but I think he's hoping that he'll be there long term.
Yeah, it was funny. All these little nuggets are coming out from him and the no trade clause, the no movements, and how he made it explicitly known. And this has been going on for years, how he doesn't want to play in Canada. He started in Winnipeg. He had 6 or 7 years there, and he's like, I'm done with Canada. It's just so funny. And I say it on the show here a lot. Players don't want to play in Canada. They really don't. When given the option, they would much prefer to play in the United States. And it's not because of the hockey. It's not because of the fan base or the cities. It's just all the intangibles that go along with it. And then the taxes. Yeah, we'll get to the taxes in a second when we talk about Shesterkin. But it was eye-opening when a player, like this guy didn't have many suitors. And for him to cut off seven teams, be like, nah, I'm not going there. He says something.
This January, the energy price cap is due to rise. But with E.ON Next, you can start your year on the right track. Our next pledge tariff guarantees to keep your energy prices below the cap. So if the cap goes up or down, you're still winning. Beat the price cap and save with E.ON Next. Switching is a breeze. Visit eonnext.com today. Next pledge is a 12-month fixed term tariff. Rates adjusted quarterly to stay below Ofgem's price cap. Your bill depends on usage. T's and C's apply.
All right, moving on. Talking about the New York Rangers and freeing up money and cap space and what they're going to do with it. Well, they made a big move. As soon as they dealt this guy, Jacob Trouba, they signed their star goaltender, Igor Shesterkin, to a huge 80 or one. What was it? How much is a total, Tim? 85 million total?
I think it's 8 years at 11.5. I think it would.
Big ticket. 85 million in signing bonuses. So again, they're using that signing bonus loophole to subvert the salary cap a little bit. I'm guessing all the signing bonuses come early, so he's tradable at the back end, or they could put him on waivers. That's how the contracts seem to be going these days. I haven't seen the details, but yes, he gets signed on. The big elephant in the room this season has been Shesterkin. Where is he going to go? He wants to be the highest paid goaltender. What's happening with him? Why are we waiting so long? He's going to be UFA at the end of the season. Well, they got it done. You got a full no move clause with, when you're dealing with the Rangers, that means absolutely nothing. Because who cares if you have a no move clause with the New York Rangers? They just laugh at that and throw it in your face. But according to other teams, he left money on the table, Tim. If he would have hit free agency this offseason, that number could have been higher. What do you think? Good deal for the Rangers signing this guy on?
I mean, anytime you can lock up a franchise goalie long term, I think it's a big deal. It's a good deal. There's all kinds of tax implications, which we'll talk about. But first, I want to ask you, like, should we be reading into the timing of this? Or I think the answer is yes, but what should the message be, that the fact that they dealt Trouba and then signed him an hour later? Are those two related, or like, how would you make sense of that?
Yeah, it's very similar to the Gensel Stamkos saying in other situations where you offload a player and you sign a player right away. I don't know if they do this to just create more news to say, okay, you'll forget about the Trouba thing. Look, we signed Shesterkin. Like, this is it. Like, let's look over here. Don't look at what's going on over there. But yeah, I think it's coordinated. I think there's a reason why this was done at this moment specifically. This could have done, you know, 2 weeks from now, a month from now. This could have been a week prior, a month prior. They definitely coordinated this with the PR team and everybody to try to ease the blow of losing Jacob Trouba. Because you can say, yeah, we're losing our captain, but look, our goaltender is here for the future. We got him till 2033. Look at how great he is. He's going to be so good. Henrik Lundqvist, who's that guy? We got Igor Shesterkin. This is fantastic. But I don't know. 11.5, Tim. That's a lot of money for a goaltender. It's a lot of money. It makes him the highest paid goaltender ever. Ever in the history of hockey. He jumps in front of Bobrovsky, Carey Price at 10.5. Is he worth it? Is he the best goaltender in hockey? Let me ask you this. If you have one 7-game series right now, which goaltender are you picking from every single team in the NHL?
Yeah, I mean, my mind immediately went to Bobrovsky. I think there's a little bit of recency bias there, but he's just been obviously outstanding over the past couple of playoff runs. I don't know how high Shesterkin's on that list.
Right.
The Rangers haven't been that great in the playoffs. So, yeah, I guess probably Bobrovsky. But here's the thing, like, Shesterkin is a workhorse, though. And you have to think, they're like, okay, the Rangers are going to keep hopefully getting better. I know that they have some aged veterans, but they're hoping that Lafreniere is going to take that next step and replace, you know, any potential drop-off from Panarin or Kreider as they get older. And I think their window is certainly like the next 8 years. So hopefully one of those years they're able to get over the hump and win the whole thing. So I think that's the cost of doing business. And like you said, he could have got even more. So is he worth it? Yes. But that's a lot of money. It's a lot of money, and the tax implication for him is that he's not taking home nearly what he could in other teams.
Yeah, when you look at different goalies who have signed recently, Jake Oettinger of the Dallas Stars just signed a big ticket. He had 8 years at $8.25 million. You know, a lot less than $11.5 million over 8 years. I would say that's $3.25 million less per year in the contract. But when you look at Dallas and you look at New York, someone did this. They did the math. They say, okay, taxes get whacked from Shesterkin. He loses $6.5 million right off the top. So he takes home a little bit over $5 million, $5,094,000. Jake Oettinger, he makes $8.25 million per year. He only loses $3 million taxes. So he takes home $5.239 million. So at the end of the day, Jake Oettinger, whose yearly contract is $3.25 million less than Igor Shesterkin, he makes $200,000 more per year. And then when you bake into that cost of living in the state, New York is incredible. You go buy a sandwich in New York, it's $25. You go buy a sandwich in Dallas, it's probably $12. You want to buy gas in New York, it's probably $6 a gallon. Dallas, it's probably $3. All these things that get baked in there, cost of a home, property taxes, all this junk that gets snowballed and added together. It's so much better to play in a state like Dallas or Florida or Nevada with the Vegas Golden Knights. It's so much more advantageous just in your pocketbook. And then just quality of living. We played in New York. My wife and I know it wasn't a long stint. It's 3, 4, 5 months. It sucked. I hated it. And it's nothing against the city. It's nothing against the people. It's just a lot of people. I'm not a large city person. And there's differences between big cities. Chicago is a huge city. Houston is a huge city. New York is a huge city. I played in all three. New York, when you step outside your door, it feels like a big city. You step outside your door and it's like, holy crap, there's people everywhere. Houston, I step outside my door, nobody. Chicago, I step outside my door. I lived in Lakeview Hills. There's nobody. Like, I could step out and go for a walk with my kids and not see anybody. It's a different vibe in New York. There's just a gazillion people stuffed into like 25 blocks. It was just incredible. So I didn't care for it. But a lot of people love that. They like just to feel the energy of homeless people peeing on the street. I saw it with my own eyes, homeless people just taking leaks on the street. I was there. And then the place I lived, Tim, 2-bedroom, fully furnished with bed bugs and everything. It was like $8,000 a month to live in this place. And there was a million. It was, and it was like, and yeah, now it's probably $12,000 to $14,000 a month. It was in a great spot, Hell's Kitchen between Times Square and the park. Beautiful location. No view, just a view of high rises. And I was just like, really? It was crazy. But yeah, people love it. Some people love it. You would probably love it.
No, it's great to visit for a weekend. That's about it. But hopefully this is the turning point for the Rangers that they can kind of turn things around a little bit and start to play better because they need to. And they need better play from Shesterkin in particular, who hasn't had basically his worst season of his career, really. Look at his goals against and stuff.
Well, that's encouraging.
Yeah, so maybe, on a contract year of all things. So maybe this sets them on the right ship and they kind of shake things up and have a different defensive scheme and all that. Because you lose that, you're losing a huge piece of your defense, but maybe it's one of those addition by subtraction things. So we'll see if the Rangers start to string some wins together.
You want to know what's going to happen? Here's what I hope in my heart of hearts. They are 2 points out of the last place in the Metropolitan Division right now. They're sitting at 29 points. The Columbus Blue Jackets have 27. The Blue Jackets have been on fire. The Pittsburgh Penguins have 28 points. They've been on fire. The Rangers have been struggling. 3-7 in the last 10. I hope in my heart of hearts that they just continue this funk and they stink the rest of the season. That's what I hope. Wouldn't that just be great for everybody involved that the Rangers just plummet to last place in the Metro and they just fall out of the playoff position and they just stink? How fun would that be to talk about? Wouldn't it?
That would be a lot of fun. That would be a lot of fun. Take a lot of pressure off the Bruins, that's for sure.
That's for sure. The Bruins are on their way. But actually, they've been playing good hockey lately, so I'm going to ease up on the Bruins. Did everybody notice how he just slides that in? Got to talk about the Bruins every episode. Can't leave them out. They're not on the agenda. We got to slide them in. Got to get them in there just once. Bruins. All right, moving on.
Yeah, let's talk about...
I had a great transition teed up, and you just took a dump right all over it.
Yeah, go ahead. Let's see.
Talking about teams struggling and sliding, and trying to right the ship. One team that has not righted the ship and continues to slide, but they've done it with class. They've kept their mouth shut. They've said the right things. Barry Trotz has said some things. We're going to start to rebuild now and start trading guys. Well, fast forward a month, they've lost 7 straight. They're not scoring. They're not keeping the puck out of their own net. Well, somewhat. Averaging 3 to 4 goals a game against, which isn't terrible in today's NHL. Well, something broke. There's a leak in the ship, Tim. One of their new acquisitions, Jonathan Marchessault. Maybe by mistake. He was talking in French. And you know how those Frenchies talk when they get going. They don't stop. No one's going to understand what I'm saying. Oh, but we get translators. We got Google Translate. He was asked a question. How did tonight's game go? What's the problem? What's the problem with the offense? Well, Jonathan Marchessault said, should I do it in French or English?
Let's see French. Try that.
Parlez-vous français? Je m'appelle Jean. Où est la bibliothèque? I'll translate that to English now. Jonathan Marchessault says, every time I wonder who I'm going to jump on the ice with. I had players in warmups, and I started the game with other guys. Shots fired. Seems like an innocent quote, but in the grand scheme of things, if you're calling out your coach saying, I have warmups with a certain line, and then the game starts when I'm playing with different players, it means the coach is not prepared. He doesn't know what's going on. It's not good for me. I don't like what's going on. Things need to change. Tim, is change on the horizon for the Predators here? What's going on?
You have to think so. And when you see a team like this that's struggling so badly unexpectedly, like I said, we've talked about this team a lot, and you kind of think, okay, is it the player? Is Stamkos just doesn't have it anymore? Was Marchessault not in the right situation? Is Brady Shea kind of, a product of a strong defensive system, and all of a sudden he stinks now? Is Forsberg hurt? Like, you kind of run all these scenarios. Is it the players? Is it the team? The coach? Marchessault is now saying it's the coach. This is him saying, listen, I can only do so much. And that's important to guys, like who they're skating with, going into game night, knowing who's going to be on your line. Not that it can change, obviously, from time to time, but he's saying this is the problem. And this is an experienced cup winner pointing out this and saying, listen, I can't work like this. This is basically, not a quote unquote, but that's the message here. So, yeah, you have to think that something's got to change. And Brunette, I saw one rumor. It wasn't one of the verified sources, but saying Brunette's going to be on the way out. And you have to think that something's got to change. It's not going to be all their shiny new pieces. They're going to try moving the coach first and see if that turns things around.
I love this. My favorite thing, and I mean this, is when players take accountability and they take responsibility for what's happening. It just shows a true professionalism. And I really enjoy it, especially when times get tough and someone steps up to the podium and they go, you know what? We got to be better. You bring me in. I'm a prize acquisition. I make $5.5 million a year. You guys invested in me when the Vegas Golden Knights didn't want me. You stepped up and you made it known that I'm going to be one of the guys here, a big piece of this team. And I've come out and I've laid an absolute effing egg this whole season. I've gotten 5 goals in 28 games and I'm a goal scorer. I've put up 40 goals in this league. I've won a Stanley Cup. I'm a leader. And I have played this season just dog doo-doo the whole season. And I'm going to step to the mic and I'm going to say it's not my fault. It's my coach's fault because I warmed up with someone different. That's why I'm not playing good. Love that. Like, it just shows the moral backbone of the player. Isn't that great? I love that when guys do that because it just shows I'm going to take responsibility. This, like, what a dummy. What an absolute dummy to say these sorts of things. You're having a terrible season. Absolute terrible. And I'm guessing that was your 28th game. I'm guessing that 27 of the 28 games, you started the game with the guys you warmed up with. Maybe 25 games you started with the guys you warmed up with. Maybe the coach saw the other team's lineup and he made a last minute change for matchups. Maybe that's what happened. So maybe instead of doing your post-game press conference in your stupid French language and calling out your coach, you shut your yap and you focus on the game. No one wants to hear it because you've sucked this year. Unequivocally sucked. The last goal you scored, it was a dump in and it banked off the top dasher board over the net and you tapped it in. It was a complete fluke of a goal. You are an awful player this season. So why don't you suck it up and work on your game instead of worrying about, my winger's different than warmups. It's going to throw me off. I'm going to play terrible. Are you kidding me? Are you absolutely kidding me?
Okay. I did not know that was coming. Okay. So, but you know Brunette.
I know Kitty Cat. Yeah.
You don't know Marchessault. Is this personal? Are you just sticking up for your friend right now?
No. Don't you think it's ridiculous that this guy is getting thrown off by playing with the different players? You're professional. I get you don't have that chemistry per se. You've played almost half the season. We're 30 games in. You should be comfortable playing with a couple different players. It's not like he's starting the game and all of a sudden he goes from the first line and now he's playing with McCarron and Jankowski and Evangelista. No, he's still playing with Forsberg and Stamkos and O'Reilly and Novak and Nyquist and Sissons. It's still the top six, you dummy. You know what I mean? It's not like you're dropping to the fourth line. You're still playing with pretty good players. So I don't understand. He's just upset they're losing and he's trying to pass the buck onto his coach. And the blame should go to Brunette. I'm not saying it's not there, but you have to stand up and say, my bad. I got to be better. You know, I know I was playing with different players and warmups in the game. It doesn't affect me. I'm a professional. I need to play better. And that's all it is. And by the way, you've lost 7 in a row. The coach is trying to mix things up and he's trying to, you know, shuffle the deck a little bit. So, it's crazy. It's absolute craziness. So yeah, there's no favoritism here just because I lived at Andrew Brunette's house and he let me drive his sweet Porsche Carrera for a while. Turbo.
Okay. The last thing on this, all that said, do you still think it's time for Brunette to get the snip?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. I think he's gone. I think he doesn't last till the new year. And that, well, the thing is, Trotz doesn't seem like he's one to cave over these situations and he might just keep them, but I don't know. But if there ever was a time to fire a coach, it's now. He is definitely on the hot seat. Tim, 7 in a row?
Yeah, some of those are overtime losses, so they're like technically, still, you know, yeah.
3-2 games. They just cannot win a one goal game. They just cannot get out of their way. And don't look now, they are very precariously close to being the worst team in hockey. The Hawks have one game in on hand in them, and they're 2 points behind. So if the Blackhawks win the next game, they will jump the Predators, and we will be 30 games into the season, and the Nashville Predators will be the worst team in hockey. 32 teams. That's crazy to think about.
Well, you mentioned the Hawks. I think we should spend some time on them maybe next show but did you see the play that they lost on with Bedard and Bertuzzi?
No, what happened?
Yeah, it's just It's over. That's not overtime, but I think it's like 2 minutes left or something. Bedard, like this beautiful breakout. He drops it over Bertuzzi. Bertuzzi does nothing with it. He throws it into his own corner from like the top of the circle in the zone. It goes wide, comes back out the zone the other way. And then I forget who they were playing, but the other team comes down and scores. And just Bedard's wingers have like combined like 9 points this year. It's just, it's crazy. Anyway, yeah. I think we should bring someone in and talk about that.
You want to bring Bedard in?
Yeah, I guess. I guess he'd be fine.
Bring him in. All right. Talking about coaches being angry, talking about coaches on the hot seat. I wanted to give you just a glimpse of the right way to do things and the wrong way to do things if you're a coach and calling out your team. Because a lot of teams are struggling. They go through the ebbs and flows of the season. Coaches need to do things to motivate their team, to get a reaction, so they can start playing better, so we don't end up having a 7-game losing streak. The key to hockey is to not get too high and to not get too low. Avoid the losing streaks at all costs. Before every season, when I was on a good team, we would say, we won't lose two in a row. That's the thing. We'll lose one. We're going to play our asses off to not lose two in a row. And we for sure won't lose three if two does happen. Some teams are on a pretty big losing streak. And the first way is the wrong way. Derek Lalonde for the Detroit Red Wings. They've lost 5 in a row. They are out of sorts. We had someone from the Winged Wheel on. They're like, oh, Detroit's, things are looking good. They're train wreck. Patrick Kane's out for the unforeseeable future. No one knows when he's going to come back. Derek Lalonde came to the podium after their 5th loss. And before the reporters even asked a question, he said, you can all save yourselves some time. Just copy and paste the same write-up you've had the last 5 games. Okay. A little passive-aggressive. Take it easy, coach. We haven't even said anything. So then he gets asked some questions. What's going on? What's wrong with this team? And he gives this quote. He says, I don't see how it can be. Again, I think they're playing some pretty responsible hockey. We're doing some quality things. We just have to do a little bit more offensively. I don't know that it is a lack of confidence, but there's frustration. Things aren't going our way. Does that sound like a coach who's calling out his team? Does that sound like a coach who's challenging his team to be better, Tim? What does that sound like to you?
Yeah, it sounds like he's out of ideas. It sounds like he's just got nothing left to... He's like, I've tried everything and it's not working. But he's not doing it in a way that's putting any blame on himself or the players. It's more like, yeah, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. What can you do? Which is pretty passive and not what you want to hear from a coach, from a team that's playing as poorly as his is.
Yeah, oh no, we're playing good. You know, no, it's not confidence. Maybe we could do a little bit more on the offensive end, but we're playing good, you guys. We're playing good. I just don't know what's going on. I don't. You don't? You're the coach. You should know. You should know what's going on. That's your job, right? That's why we pay you money, to come in here and figure out why things are going bad. Don't step to the podium and think, oh, it's just we're not getting the bounces. We're not getting the bounces. Really? Now, here's the right way to do it. Mike Sullivan of the Pittsburgh Penguins. I played for Sully. Good coach. Knows his team. Not just X's and O's. Knows his team. So the Penguins, in contrast, have been playing great hockey. They've won 4 in a row. And they beat some good teams. The Canucks, the Flames, the Panthers, and they beat the Bruins. They've been playing good hockey. They lost to the Rangers. Sullivan comes to the podium. And mind you, they've been playing good hockey. Back in the playoff hunt. It's a good team. Things are going well in Pittsburgh. Good mojo. They had one bad game. He goes, quote, probably the worst game we played in the month. Everything we talked about before the game, we did the complete opposite. We talked about managing the puck. Well, we gave up 6 2-on-1s and a breakaway. We talked about bringing physicality to the game, and we didn't touch anybody. It's hard to win when you do things like that. That was not a collective effort. Do you see the difference, Tim?
Yeah, and I'm kind of laughing because I think everyone who's ever played hockey has heard a coach talk like that, or even probably other sports too. You know, you just like everything we talked about that we've been working on in practice, you guys did the opposite of that. And it's great. And it's great to hear because you need the guys to be called out like that. Especially like you said, like they've been winning. There was one bad game and all of a sudden you're getting this kind of call out from the coach. I think it probably makes him play better. And he's holding the guys accountable in a way that, like you said, Lalonde isn't. So I love this.
Yeah. And you probably would like to play for a coach like Lalonde, who just is always patting on the back and saying, everything's great, Tim. Don't worry. No, you're doing fine.
And you haven't and scored all season, but
yeah, it's, you know, keep going. It's just you just stick with it. And then he'll close the door and he'll stab you in your back. Sully's fan. This is the exact way to do it. call to players, send a message. It's not veiled. It's not meek. It's not just surrounded with question marks. No, we sucked. The reason why we lost was X and Y and Z. This is it. I love that. It's a complete difference in take and how you deliver it. And the players see that. They know that. Sullivan comes off as a leader of the team. He's driving the ship. Everything goes through him. Lon comes off as a little baby who doesn't instill any confidence in his team and he doesn't have the heartbeat of the team. That's why the Penguins will climb back into contention and the Wings will continue to fall. Speaking of hot seat, Lon should be gone. He should have been gone yesterday. It's unbelievable.
I was about to ask you, who's the next coach to lose his job? Because we could see probably five more this season, yeah, the way it's going for some teams. So I think Lalonde's in that conversation.
Brunette.
Marty St. Louis could be one too. I mean, there's some others here.
Yeah, I think St. Louis lasts this season, but definitely those two guys. So you just look at the bottom of the standings, who's going to go? The Ducks aren't going to fire their coach. The Sharks, no. Seattle Kraken, potentially. They've been struggling. But yeah, those two guys are the next two out the door. They have to. Their teams have struggled. They have potential. They need to show some kinds of improvement. But it's just, yeah, the Lon needs to go. It's time. So, all right, are we doing any quick hits, Tim? What are we doing next?
No, that's it. That's all I got for you today. Nothing really crazy.
Everybody, Tim's slacking. Yeah. He doesn't have anything.
Yeah. Nothing, not a thing.
All right, well, I appreciate everybody listening. I hope you had a good weekend. We will talk to you on Wednesday. Cheers, everybody.
This January, the energy price cap is due to rise. But with E.ON Next, you can start your year on the right track. Our next pledge tariff guarantees to keep your energy prices below the cap. So if the cap goes up or down, you're still winning. Beat the price cap and save with E.ON Next. Switching is a breeze. Visit eonnext.com today. Next pledge is a 12-month fixed term tariff, rates adjusted quarterly to stay below Ofgem's price cap. Your bill depends on usage. T's and C's apply.